Gotcha. You're hearing two soundtracks? Maybe it's just my craziness, my scratchiness. Welcome, everybody, to Freedom Quest. And I am Eliza Jane, and Luch is my co-host. And, man, I thought we were going to have a quiet week, but, gee, not this week, I guess, huh? Say hello, Lucha. Lucha?
Well, Eliza, can you hear me?
I can now.
Okay, well, I'm going to call back in because I was hearing a couple different soundtracks, and I'm hearing three different Elizas. Like you're... Now I'm hearing myself. I'm calling back in.
All right, see you in a few.
Okay.
Well, welcome everybody to Freedom Quest, and tonight we were going to start out with the subject line of, what's care doing for you? With what's going on in the news this week, we're going to take it down a little bit of a different track. And when while Luch is coming back in, I wanted to actually start out with something that's somewhat off track on all of this, but I wanted to bring it to everybody's attention before we kicked into the subject matter anyway. So here's Representative Frank Wolf is promoting a bill for the House Select Committee, to create a House Select Committee on Benghazi attack. I want to let everybody know about this because I think it's something we need to promote. We need to contact our congressman and get everybody on board on this. Now, there are everyone from 700 special ops that are supporting this H.R. 36 to create this House Select Committee to investigate Benghazi attack, as well as upwards of about 120-plus co-sponsors, last I heard. And this was from some commentary that I heard on a conference call with General Jerry Boykin. So let me just read this to you a little bit. This article I got out of January 29th, but this was just a recent conversation that I heard. There was about 120 co-sponsors. So Representative Frank Wolf, on January 18th, introduced H.R. 36. Sorry, I got to bring Lucha in. My apologies, Lucha. I kicked off. I apologize. We doing good now?
So far, so good. I'm not hearing three of you.
Well, that would be disastrous. Say hello to everybody before I get into this.
Hello, everybody, before she gets into this. We got our... Sorry, it was weird. It was weird. It was the two different song tracks, except it was the same song. And then you, I was hearing three of you, and then you kept repeating what you had said before. And then when I spoke, I heard myself again. It was just a bad call. I let Skype know what I gave them some feedback before I called back in. Anyway, everybody here in the chat room, we've got Kath, East Anglian EDL, Jeff, Kel, a.k.a. Red Fox, Rob, 2756, and Steve Balladeer. Thank you all for being here. And Poppy just popped in. I love it. Thank you for popping in, Poppy.
So, oh, we're having too much fun here.
We have a lot to talk about. So welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. And let me go through this just a little bit, and then we're going to get on a couple things with Boston, and then we're going to get on with CARE. But I wanted everybody to know about this. Representative Frank Wolf on January 18th introduced H.R. 36, a bill which would set up a House Select Committee to do a thorough investigation of the Benghazi attack and the administration's action and inaction related to it. The bill has upwards, like I said, of about 120 co-sponsors today. This article was from January 29th. But Representative Wolf also noted that the New York Times had reported that some Egyptians who had been involved in the Benghazi attack were also involved in the Algerian gas kidnapping. Hadn't heard about that part, but why, in the wake of the deadly attack, terrorist attack in Algeria, no reporters were investigating, there is just some real strange stuff going on. H.R. 36 calls for the following action. Not later than 90 days after the initial meeting of the Select Committee shall conduct an investigation of and submit to the House a report on any intelligence known to the United States relating to the attack on United States Consulate in Benghazi before the attack, a definitive timeline of the attack, how the relevant agencies in the executive branch responded to the attack, and whether appropriate congressional notifications were made. Any improper conduct by officials relating to the attack. Recommendations on what steps Congress and the President should take to prevent future attack. And any other relevant issues relating to the attack or the response of the attack. And again, 700 plus special ops are supporting this bill. And they are asking very serious questions. Why was there no military response to the events in Benghazi? What, if any, non-military assistance was provided during the attack? How many U.S. personnel were injured in Benghazi? Why have the survivors of the attack not been questioned? Where are the survivors? Who was in the White House Situation Room? Where were Leon Panetta, General Martin Dempsey during the crisis? And what inputs and recommendations did they make? Where were the National Security Advisor Tom Donilon, his deputy Dennis McDonough, Valerie Jarrett, and John Brennan during the attacks? And what, if any, recommendations or decisions did any of them make? Why were F-16 fighter attacks based in Aviano, Italy, less than 2 hours away, never considered a viable option? Were any strike aircraft, such as AC-130 gunship in the area, possibly overhead, that would cause former SEAL Tyrone Woods to laser his attacker's position and call for gunship fire support? There's a list of all kinds of questions and supporters and signed onto this. Please call your congressman. Make sure that they're supporting this. Make sure that this thing happens. This is just too far out in terms of timeline for this to even have not been found out. And now with Boston, they think they're going to come up with a suspect, prosecute him, and get him in behind bars and or the death penalty before the end of the week. Are you kidding me? Yeah, all right. That's my starting on this program. Let's change it over now to Boston. How horrific that has happened in such an event. But folks, we were warned. We've been knowing it's coming. What did we just go through last couple of programs, Lucha? The four stages of jihad. We pretty much checked off everything, and we're at war. We're right on the cusp of it happening, and I think this is the beginning. That was an IED. It's been identified by way of terrorist. It's been finally committed to by the president that it was a terrorist attack. The fool. Boston was a flag? How so, Green Dog? I don't think so. I think it's the beginning. I think it's the first IED we've had in the States, and at least the first one that went off. Probably some of those other ones that they've been able to stop might be considered so, but anyway, excuse me. My voice is still a little raspy, so forgive me if I kind of stumble through this tonight, but I'm feeling a little clearer in the head. Hopefully I'm sounding a little clearer. Anyways, there is all kinds of stories back and forth about who did Boston, where it came from, who guided it, who started it, who was in the crowd. And one minute they've got somebody in custody, the next minute they don't. Lucha, I was telling you that I got a recording of the roommate of the Saudi that they supposedly had in question. CNN did an interview of him, and man, if it was you or I being interviewed, we'd still be behind bars the way this guy answered questions. This is just too freaking amazing that this guy is still up going, I don't know.
Yeah. Before you play the recording, I want to give you guys an update, because something about this Saudi national that all of a sudden became no longer a person of interest, something is fishy to me. I don't know if it's because my radar is up. I don't know if it's – do I want it to be this Saudi national guy? I don't know. But something deep down in my gut is telling me something about this Saudi guy. I've got several things on this. On Waleed Shubat's website, I think he published this yesterday, the update on the Saudi suspect. They're continually posting about this. All right, so he was a Saudi national that was burned, and they grabbed him. And what Waleed Shubat says on this side is that he consented to a search of his fifth floor apartment in Revere, Massachusetts. It was searched by federal authorities, who then exited the apartment with several bags containing obvious contents of interest. There have also been reports that the suspect smelled of gunpowder. The sources said that, this is via the New York Post, which, okay, we can take it for what it's worth, but the sources said that after the man was grabbed by police, he smelled of gunpowder and declared, "I thought there would be a second bomb." He also asked, "Did anyone die?" Officials showed up at his apartment at about 5:30 p.m. in unmarked vehicles, and it was on a street where the man had lived. About an hour later, more vehicles carrying agents of the FBI, Homeland Security, and ATF also descended on the site, along with firefighters and a bomb squad. Okay, so you've got officials going up to his apartment at about 5:30 p.m., and whatever they do in there for an hour compels them to, an hour later, ask for FBI agents, Homeland Security, ATF, along with firefighters, and a bomb squad. Now, he has ties on another Shubat, and I'll post all these links. I can't. On this one, I've got too many links up. Yeah, and I can't post it right now because I've got too many links up. On another Shubat thing, he's got several ties to Al-Qaeda. His name is Abdul Rahman Ali Al-Harbi, and he's supposed to be from a prominent Saudi family. He was hospitalized and then became a suspect and then a person of interest. And this article goes on to show the ties to Al-Qaeda. Okay, so in another article on WorldNet Daily, it says that two Saudi nationals were reportedly injured in the bombings in Boston. One, the 20-year-old one that I'm talking about, Abdul Rahman Ali Al-Harbi, was initially put on under armed guard at the hospital. All right, so the federal officials raided his apartment.
Now, did you see the pictures that came out of there as well?
Out of the raid?
Yeah, out of the raid. Some of the pictures that they had of the officers bringing that stuff out. There was coils of wire and everything else.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, listen to this. Okay, now the Saudi embassy in Washington has said Al-Harbi was no longer under detention and is not a suspect in the bomb blast. Saudi diplomat Azam bin Abdel Karim reportedly visited him in the hospital. Nail Al-Jubeer, a spokesman for the Saudi mission in Washington, stated that U.S. authorities told the embassy no Saudi national was a suspect in the Boston Marathon attack and that the Saudi national in question was a witness, not a suspect. Okay, now let me go over to this latest one, and oh gosh, I'm going in between screens. So let's see, because this was a good one, this Waleed Shubat one. Doggone it, do I not have it anymore? Oh, this was a good one. This was the best one that they had.
Showing the picture of the three?
No.
It was Waleed Shubat that talked about the innocent Saudi spotted with two other Saudis in the marathon, and there's a picture of the three of them just hanging out and looking at each other like, what's going on? That was, I posted that in the chat room already. This one, he talks about where is it at here? Said, first, a few things that are undisputed. We know that the federal, state, and local authorities took interest in a Saudi national named Abdul Rahman Ali Al-Harbi after the Boston Marathon bombings. We also know that he was injured. Is this the one you read? This isn't the one you read, I don't think, is it?
No, this is one I was talking about, that he was injured and that those authorities searched his apartment and hauled away bags of stuff.
Yep.
Add to that the fact that not long after, Secretary of State John Kerry secretly met with the Saudi foreign minister after an open meeting with a photo spray was abruptly changed to a closed-door meeting. Not long after this meeting, Al-Harbi was no longer a person of interest. Okay, so authorities are not denying that Al-Harbi was injured in the blast, and they are not denying that he is a Saudi national. These authorities are, however, denying that Al-Harbi had anything to do with the bombings. This leads to what appears to be the three Saudis being started near the scene of the explosion. So who are these guys, and who is Al Harbi?
Well, they're actually relating them to Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
In that, a little farther down in the article. And who has six relatives belonging to Al-Qaeda and five that were detained at Gitmo, was injured at the same terrorist bombings at the Boston Marathon. The bombings had certain characteristics that indicate that they were the work of Al-Qaeda. So, having said that, six relatives in Gitmo are right, and Al-Qaeda, and they're standing around something like this, and two bombs go off, yeah. And we're not supposed to suspect that it's Islamic-related, yeah. There's another article that we take this. There's actually a couple that I. What's interesting is yesterday I pulled an article off too from Reza Khalili that actually references some Iranian influence. I don't know if you saw that, Lucha. There was Reza Khalili is saying that although it is not known yet who is responsible for Monday's heinous bombings at the Boston Marathon that killed three and injured more than 100. A source within Iranian intelligence services told WorldNet Daily the Islamic regime was behind them and to look for trails through Sri Lanka and Bangladesh. The source said the bombs were planted near the end of the race so that the horrific images of the blast would be captured by all the media there and be replayed over and over throughout the world. A senior commander of the Islamic regime had warned less than 2 months ago that terrorism was coming to America. If the people of America and Europe do not confront the aggressive policies of their governments, they cannot then remain far from the possible future events, terror attacks. The regime's armed forces deputy chief of staff, Brigadier General Massoud Jazeera, said in a February 23rd interview with Fars News Agency, a media outlet run by the Revolutionary Guards. Al-Qaeda groups and other services which operate for the interests of America in Syria, will soon change the region of their operations and thereafter create new problems for America and Europe. So,
yeah.
We don't know if it's coming from Saudi, don't know if it's coming from Syria, because there's some commentary from Assad as well. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad said this was just today in an interview that Western nations will suffer the consequences for what he said was support for al-Qaeda militants in his country's civil war. We have got this all over the board, and nobody knows. Nobody knows what's going on and who's doing what. But I find it so interesting that the Saudis were picked up. And do you remember about a month ago where there was a report that Saudi travel benefit prompts congressional questions, where the Saudis
yes.
were travel restrictions were relaxed?
Yes.
House Homeland Security Chairman Michael T. McCaul and six subcommittee chairmen want Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano to explain why Saudi Arabia is being added into a program for trusted travelers. This is out on the...
What's wrong with that picture, Eliza Jane?
Yeah, exactly.
What
okay,
is
let's...
wrong with that picture? And then I just posted in the chat room an article from Atlas Shrugs, why is the FBI covering up for 9/11 Saudi jihadists? And it's an expose. There's a jaw-dropping expose in the Miami Herald today about why is the FBI covering up for 9/11 Saudi jihadists. Well, Obama bowed to the Saudi king. They paid for his Harvard education. We've got infiltration. We've got Saudi pretty much owning us. And we pay for it every time we go to the gas pump. That's the problem.
Yeah, and there's no way to get around that at the moment because our Saudi prince, Barry Hussein Obama, is not going to do anything to change it. But there's another – I get a briefing from this study of terrorism and response to terrorism, bombings at the 2013 Boston Marathon. In light of the series of bombings that exploded near the finish line – on Monday. Here's some data that's interesting, too. START's Global Terrorism Database records 16 terrorist attacks that have occurred in Boston since 1970. That was interesting to read, but only three since 1990. The most recent recorded terrorist attack occurred in November 1995 when an explosion occurred at the Boston-based headquarters of the Christian Science Community. This 1995 bombing caused no fatalities. According to the Global Terror Database, Boston has been the 14th most frequently targeted U.S. cities by terrorists in the past 40-plus years. Houston, Texas has similarly experienced 16 attacks during this period. New York, 430 attacks, is by far the most frequently targeted U.S. city, with Los Angeles, 103 attacks, and second most common target. Really, wow. The majority of Boston's terrorist activity occurred in the 1970s, with black nationalists responsible for five of the 12 attacks. During that decade, violent white supremacists and violent far leftists were also active in Boston during this time. There have been two fatal terrorist attacks in Boston since 1970, both classified as assassinations. 1992, Iwao Matsuda, president of a Japanese university, was assassinated in his hotel during a visit to Boston. 1995, Paul McLaughlin, a prosecutor specializing in gang-related cases, was shot in his car in a parking lot in the city. So, this was kind of some interesting information. Coordinated attacks in the United States. Reports indicate that two bombs exploded near the finish line of the 2013 Boston Marathon. Early reports had indicated that the additional devices in the area were defused prior to detonation, but those reports have been discredited. I really wonder about that, though, don't you? It just, I really have a hard time believing that there were only two. But globally, 12% of the more than 100,000 terrorist attacks that have occurred since 1970, wow, 100,000 terrorist attacks, have been part of a coordinated attack where the perpetrators have targeted multiple targets within a short period of time. The rate of such complex coordinated attacks in the United States is consistent with the global average, with 300 of the 2,362 attacks in the United States between 1970 and 2011 qualifying as part of multiple attacks. And this has got all kinds of data and years and what's gone on, so I found that quite interesting when I received that yesterday. But let me go back to, if you don't mind, I think I'll play this interview with the Saudi national's roommate. This is just so incredibly stupid that he's standing out there and going what he's doing. Let me play this real quick for all of you to hear this.
Inside this apartment, as we said, three young men from Saudi Arabia were told in their early 20s here on student visas. Now, one of those individuals is a Mohammed Bada. Now, he lives in the apartment, and we got a chance to talk to him today. He says he was questioned by police, and he says that he signed a paper that allowed police to come in and search his apartment last night. That sounds like a search warrant. He says his friend, who is 22 years old, is in the hospital with injuries that he suffered at the marathon, but he says he doesn't believe his friend had anything to do with the bombing. Now, we talked to him as he was leaving the apartment this morning. Mohammed, just tell me, what was it like when the police came?
Dude.
They came to your apartment?
Dude, until now, I would know. I'm going to look at the bullets and ask him what happened. I don't know.
Can I ask you how you feel about the police coming to your apartment?
Yeah,
like
it's
that?
Scary.
Scary?
Yes. So scary.
Do you know what they took out of your apartment?
No.
Did your friends have anything to do with these bombings?
That's a bad question because I don't know about that.
Well, do you know anything at all about these bombings? Did you or your friends have anything to do with them? Because the police came to your apartment, FBI.
Actually, I came to take my money and I want to change my clothes to go to my school, and I couldn't.
But did you or your friends have anything to do with the bombings of the marathon?
I don't know. Is my friend? Is my friend? My question is my friend in action with this bomb? I don't know.
Don't you know him well?
I don't know.
No, they're good people.
What did they do in the apartment? What did they do to your belongings? inside
the apartment?
We leave
together, yeah.
Yeah,
we
did they go through the apartment and move
you
it?
Do? What did you do at your apartment?
No, I'm just asking you, Mohammed. What did they do inside the apartment? Did they look through files? What did they do inside there?
Yep.
Did they take things away?
Eating, yep.
No, but the police.
What did the police do?
Oh,
the police
were
my friend.
Did they go through?
What did they do in the apartment, the police? And what did they do to your friend?
I don't know. I was outside.
You were outside the apartment while the police were inside?
What's the condition of the apartment now? Did they move things around? Did they go through things? What does your apartment look like inside after the police came there?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I don't know.
You don't know what your apartment looked like?
I don't remember, no.
Where's your friend now?
Someone's maybe in the hospital because he gets hurt.
Why is he in the hospital?
He gets hurt by the bomb.
Oh, one of your roommates got hurt by the bomb.
Yeah.
He was at the marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in the hospital. Do you know what hospital? Brigham and Women's?
Are there police?
Did you talk to him?
No.
Well, how do you know he was hurt by the bomb?
The police says that to me.
Who said that to you?
The police.
The police.
Yep.
The police said that your friend, your roommate, was at the marathon and was hurt by the bomb.
Yeah.
And is in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And what's his name?
Who is
your friend who's in the hospital?
I can't give any information. Let me go.
When's the last time you saw your friend, Mohammed? When was the last time he was in the apartment with you?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Do you think that your friend had anything to do with the bombing at the marathon?
I don't understand.
The bomb at the marathon. Do you think your friend did it?
No, I don't think so.
Why?
No, because the good people.
What's your friend like?
Yeah, they're studying, and I haven't heard about that.
Because he's a good guy. He's my friend. He didn't do it. He's my good friend. What's his name? I can't say.
Interesting.
Unbelievable. I know it was hard to understand. I apologize for that. I thought it'd be a little bit clearer, but unbelievable. Right, Cal, you're absolutely like correct. What a crock. And this man standing out there when they brought out all kinds of wires and gadgets and literally, when you see the pictures of the police bringing stuff out of the apartment, and originally from what I heard, this guy said, this Bada said, oh, they didn't take anything out. Really? Pictures tell a whole lot different story. So, don't know. Don't know if it's Saudi. Don't know if it's Iran. But I think they're covering up something, and I think they're hiding it from the public. I don't think they're being transparent. I think very, very odd. Found another article, Luce. This one was an old one, but I think so pertaining to today of what's going on. You've probably seen Governor Deval Patrick speaking to the, you know, to the media. Well, back in 2010. May 22nd, 2010, despite warnings from the Boston Jewish leadership about the extremist background of the Islamic Society of Boston Cultural Center, Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick visited the Islamic Center and publicly embraced the extremist Imam Abdullah Farouk. Shortly after Patrick's visit to the Islamic Center, independent candidate for Massachusetts Governor Tim Cahill criticized Patrick for pandering to Islamic extremists. During the press conference held by MAS to condemn Cahill's statements, Newton Rabbi Eric Gervis embraced the head of the MAS. Rabbi, where is your brain? He embraced this head of the MAS, Bilal Kalim, for which he was criticized by the APT, which is the Americans for Peace and Tolerance, President Charles Jacobs, in a Jewish Advocate article. Upset by Dr. Jacobs, 70 Massachusetts rabbis issued a letter of collective condemnation, accusing him of waging a destructive campaign against Boston Muslim community. Well, Deval Patrick, look what you got now. You're embracing the Islamic Society of Boston, and this is what you get. Isn't that wonderful, this religion of peace, what it brings to a city? Isn't it great? And these 70 rabbis collectively signed a letter in support of this? Rabbis, come to your senses. Can you believe this? Oh, when I saw that and knew what went on in Boston, it just was so incredulous I couldn't believe it. So what has he done since 2010? God only knows, in between it all. Welcomed in interfaith dialogue, welcomed in, you name it. Well, Massachusetts, isn't that where they had the school children going and the boys separated out and praying? Massachusetts public schools? Unbelievable. And, of course, CARE. Are we ready to go to CARE or kind of leaning towards that? Lucha,
well,
you got more you want to talk about Boston?
Well, Iggy just brought up in the chat room, which I wanted to tie in with this Boston thing, about the ricin envelopes sent to the senators
and sent
to Obama. And isn't that exactly what happened after 9/11, that anthrax envelopes were sent to lawmakers? So now we have ricin being sent after this Boston bombing. You know, it reeks of Al-Qaeda. And you can't convince me that it was somebody else. Or, you know, I mean, it was Patriots Day in Boston. Okay, the left-wing media is trying to paint it on some right-winger or whatever, you know. But that just doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense to me at all. And
well, you know what else it was? You know what? You said it was Patriots Day in Boston. I believe Tuesday was Independence Day for Israel.
Exactly, and Nakba Day for so-called Palestine. And nobody mentioned that. Nobody mentioned that.
Yep.
I mean, the day of Nakba for Palestinians is the day that Israel gained their independence, and it was that day as well. You know, but you don't hear about that on mainstream media. You just don't hear about it. But it was Nakba Day, you know, Israel's birthday, but it was a bad day for the so-called Palestinians. So you're right. Eliza, I think the jihad has begun, the true jihad. And while we have these attacks, these terrorist attacks, you know, in Boston and elsewhere, and who knows how many are thwarted that we don't even hear about.
Right.
So we have true jihad coming here again now on the one side with these attacks, and then we have the civilization jihad from CARE. And you have CARE. I mean, CARE National, CARE Chicago, all of these CARE guys are going out and saying, you know, they're praying for the Boston families and doing this and doing this. You know, CARE is waging this campaign of caring about the victims and everything. And so people are, you know, Americans, especially Americans, we want to believe the best of people. So if you've got this group like CARE and they're saying, oh, well, we pray for the Boston, you know, families and people of Boston, and we denounce this terrorism. You know, you've got CARE saying that here, but do we really believe them? No, I don't think so. But a lot of people do believe them, and that's the problem.
Yep. I agree. We've got just kind of making a funny in the chat room. Kel said she's getting duct tape from the utility room. Well, the first thing I thought of, and not trying to be funny, but, let's see. We've got to now start to ban pressure cookers. We've got to ban the hardware stores for what gets purchased. We've got to ban garbage cans because you can fill them with IEDs.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. You've got to ban nuts and bolts. You've got to ban. Don't we have to, like, start a whole, like, isn't there a new bill? We've got an HR bill we've got to create. I'm telling you.
Yep. Before we get started on CARE, let me do a shout-out of the chat room because we've got quite a few people who have joined us.
Good.
So thank you all for being here. We love you guys. Iggy Mom, Kath, Chuck Fall, East Anglian EDL, a.k.a. Jeff, Green Dog Vorp, we've got Holder Awakens, Kel, a.k.a. Red Fox, Poppy, Rob, Smokey in Texas, Steve the Balladeer. He's also Romance and Sorrow. This guy sings really good. He's got a good voice. And Vito Esposito, Mama Mia, No Sharia. Welcome, you guys. Thank you so much for being here. And if anybody in the chat room wants to know what CARE is doing in your neck of the woods, let me know. But before we... Well, actually, I have this really neat thing, Eliza. Before we get started on what CARE is doing, I'm going to post in the chat room this little link that I found because it shows the CARE chapters. And rather than telling you the states where CARE has chapters. I'm going to tell you where CARE does not have chapters. This is very, I mean, if you guys click onto that link, it's a very interesting little map. It's divided into green and blue. And green, of course, is the chapters that CARE has because Islam is, green is Islam's color. So the states in America that do not have CARE chapters, going from west to east, Oregon, Idaho, Utah, Wyoming, Montana, Colorado, New Mexico, Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota, Iowa, Wisconsin, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, Indiana, West Virginia, North Carolina, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine, and Alaska, and Hawaii. It's funny how CARE, those are the states that do not have CARE chapters. So those, to me, would be the states to want to move to. Because I was looking, in doing research for this show, I was trying to find different stories on CARE, what's CARE doing, in these different states. And I couldn't find, say, a CARE for Mississippi. Now I know why. They don't have a chapter there. So there are quite a lot of states that do not have CARE chapters. Unfortunately, in my state, they have four.
I'm wondering if that really is an updated map, because it sure seems like I found a whole slew of CARE chapters doing something. But maybe...
It's not updated. I don't know. That's just what I found on...
Let's see. Because you've got Tennessee not showing one, but Tennessee's got a Muslim Capital Day planned. Or had one planned, sorry, March 12th. But interesting. Let's go through this. Because I'll tell you what, they're busy little bees. They are just busy little bees. One of the, as I was going through all of this, I'm thinking about this, and I know you all think that I'm probably a little nuts, but I keep thinking, how do we get involved like they are? How do we get a big consortium, a big mass group of people across the United States that we create? What can we call ourselves, that we can form to just kind of be the back door, kind of nudging them out at every event? Because when I walk through, I actually pulled a whole lot of articles directly from CARE National. And it's interesting to see what they have going on. Let's see, I think that's a Boston article. But I pulled off, like, their goals and their objectives and some of the events that they're involved with. And they're doing everything from in getting involved with college kids, with graduates, with of course, the grade schools and everything, and they're actually getting people involved with trying to rewrite our textbooks. But let me find. Let me start with this. The former CARE leader that was elected to head Syrian rebels. There you go. There's a good model for you for CARE. Muslim Brotherhood backs U.S. citizen who worked for American Group. He was the former leader of the Council on American-Islamic Relations in Texas. Yeah, U.S. citizen Ghassan Hito served as vice president for the Dallas-Fort Worth branch of CARE, according to the Global Muslim Brotherhood Daily Report. CARE, the Justice Department discovered, was founded in Washington, D.C. Well, we know that. Okay. At a meeting in Istanbul, Hito received 35 votes out of 48 ballots cast by the opposition Syrian National Coalition's members. FBI wiretap evidence from the Holy Land Foundation shows CARE Executive Director Nihad Awad was at the October 1993 meeting of Hamas leaders and activists in Philadelphia. These are some of the things that CARE is doing for you. CARE, of course, is an unindicted co-conspirator, affirming the Muslim group has been involved with a conspiracy to support Hamas. We pretty much know that. And here's some of their fearless leaders. Ghassan El-Ashi, CARE's founding director, was convicted in 2004 of illegally shipping high-tech goods to terror state Syria and is serving 80 months in prison. Mutana El Hanoudi. Care director's home was raided in 2006 by FBI agents in connection with an active terrorism investigation. Agents also searched the offices of his advocacy group, Focus on Advocacy, easy for me to say, and Advancement of International Relations, which Al Hanoudi operates out of Dearborn, Michigan and Washington, D.C. He immigrated to the U.S. from Iraq, formerly helped run a suspected Hamas terror front called Life for Relief and Development. Al Hanoudi collected over $6 million for support of Hamas, according to a 2001 FBI report. Although Hanoudi denies it, he has praised Palestinian suicide bombers. Of course, Abdurrahman Alamoudi, another care director serving 23 years in federal prison, should be life for plotting terrorism, who was caught on tape complaining that bin Laden hadn't killed enough Americans in the U.S. embassy bombings in Africa. Siraj Wahaj, gee, what a nice guy. Member of CARE's Board of Advisors, Wahaj was named as an unindicted co-conspirator in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. The radical Brooklyn imam was close to convicted terrorist Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman and defended him during his trial. Yeah. Wahaj was a key speaker at CARE's 15th annual fundraising banquet in Arlington, Virginia in 2009. Then there's Randall Ishmael Royer, the former CARE communications specialist and civil rights coordinator, serving 20 years in prison in connection with the Virginia Jihad Network, which he led while employed by CARE at its Washington headquarters. Wow, what great guys, aren't they? Bassam Kafagi, another CARE official. Kafagi was arrested in 2003 while serving as CARE's director of community affairs. He pleaded guilty to charges on bank and visa fraud stemming from the federal counterterror probe of his leadership role in the Islamic Assembly of North America, which has supported al-Qaeda and advocated suicide attacks on America. He was sentenced to 10 months in prison. 10 months? And he deported to his native Egypt. Wow. There you go. Laura Jogleet, a civil rights coordinator for CARE for her Washington area home, was raided by federal agents after 9/11 as part of an investigation into terrorist financing, money laundering, and tax fraud. Her husband, Mohammed Jaglit, key leader in the Saudi-backed SAR network, is a target of the still-active probe. Jaglit sent two letters accompanying donations, one for $10,000, the other one for $5,000, from the SAR Foundation to Sami El-Orion, now a convicted terrorist. Each letter, according to the federal affidavit, Jaglit instructed El-Orion not to disclose the contribution publicly or to the media, unquote. Investigators suspected the funds were intended for Palestinian terrorists via a U.S. front called WISE, W-I-S-E. Wow. Of course, there's Nihad Awad, wiretap evidence from the Holy Land case puts CARE's executive director at the Philadelphia meeting of Hamas leaders and activists in 1993, and that was secretly recorded by the FBI. Omar Ahmad, U.S. prosecutors also named CARE's founder and chairman emeritus as an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land case. Nabil Sadoun, a CARE board member. Sadoun has served on the board of the United Association for Studies and Research, which investigators believe to be a key Hamas front in America. In fact, Sadoun co-founder UASR with Hamas leader Marzouk. Justice Department added UASR to the list of unindicted co-conspirators. Mohammed Nimer, CARE's research director, also served as board of director at the UASR, the strategic arm of the Hamas. Rafiq Jaber, a founding director of CARE. Jaber was the longtime president of the Islamic Association for Palestine. 2002, a federal judge found that the Islamic Association for Palestine has acted in support of Hamas. In his capacity as IAP chief, Jaber praised Hezbollah attacks on Israel. He also served on the board of the Radical Mosque in the Chicago area. Rabih Hadid, the CARE fundraiser, was a founder of the Global Relief Foundation, which after 9/11 was blacklisted by the Treasury Department for financing al-Qaeda and other terror groups. Its assets were frozen in December 2001. Hadid was arrested on terror-related charges and deported to Lebanon in 2003. Hamza Yousef, FBI investigated the CARE board member after 9/11 because just two days after the attacks, he made an ominous prediction to a Muslim audience. Quote, "This country is facing a terrible fate, and the reason for that is because this country stands condemned." Yousef warned, "It stands condemned like Europe stood condemned because of what it did, and lest people forget, Europe suffered two world wars after conquering the Muslim lands." CARE's founder, Ahmad, while claiming to be a moderate and patriotic American, reportedly told a group of Muslims in Northern California in 1998 that they are in America not to assimilate, but to help assert Islam's rule over the country. Then there's Hooper, Ibrahim Hooper, CARE's communications director, also has expressed a desire to overturn the U.S. system of government in favor of an Islamic state. Quote, "I wouldn't want to create the impression that I wouldn't like the government of the United States to be Islamic sometime in the future," unquote, Hooper said in a 1993 interview with the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Quote, "But I am not going to do anything violent to promote that. I'm going to do it through education," unquote. So there you have it. We have all these fine, upstanding young fellows that are just running such an excellent organization that we can all stand and be proud to support, right?
Right. Sorry. Are you there? Uh-oh. Eliza. Eliza?
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Can you hear me now? Hello?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I'm not going back to myself. Yeah, I somehow got disconnected. That's weird. I think I finished the article.
Okay, people can still hear me. You can hear Eliza, right? Just lost Eliza.
Okay.
Talk, Eliza.
Can you hear me now?
Okay.
Smokey says he can. I don't know. It all of a sudden I looked up and the BTR thing was studio was disconnecting me. I'm not sure what happened. Okay. Where are we at? I know I just read off quite a few nice young fellas. Thank you all for the patience. I'm not sure what's going on here. We don't have any storm going on, but anyways.
It's them.
We've got one caller in the queue. Do you want to try and take a caller, Eliza? Or Eliza, or Lucia?
Yes.
I am so.
Always open for callers, unless they're. Well, we're always open for callers. We'll take care of them as they come.
What's that?
Yes, let's take the caller.
All right. Caller 904.
You guys are.
What's
up? Hi, kiss me. It's Trisha.
Trisha! Oh, my goodness.
I couldn't stop long enough to log on, so I got the number, and I'm making a phone call. Hi, Liza.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I was just listening to everything you were reading. That was great. I'm telling you what, these young men, I have a daughter I think I need to sign her up for.
Well, there you go.
Well,
I think that'd be great. Does she like wearing that skirt?
Oh, I don't think she'd mind at all. I'll kill her first, but you know, hey. Hi, Christy, honey.
Trisha, this is my patriot set. Let me tell you about Trisha. I am so proud of Trisha right now, our caller. This is my patriot sister in Florida, and
cool.
She is in D.C. She's working on Obamacare, and she has just finished in Washington, D.C., meeting with some congressmen, meeting with the IRS, talking about Obamacare. And, Trisha, you are awesome.
Oh, you're, please. No, I'm just
keep up the good work.
Thank you. I had to get out of D.C. because it got really uncomfortable there today. I'm going back down to Florida, but I stopped for the night with my two dogs, and we're in Fayetteville, North Carolina. But let me tell you what, D.C. was nasty today. That was absolutely a nasty place to be in. The energy in that town would have driven you crazy. It was so bad. Everybody is paranoid, and you know, everybody has an opinion on what's going on, and now they found the second letter that somebody sent to Obama with Ryzen in it. And it's getting out of control. And, guys, I don't know what to expect, but expect everything.
Well, did
I'm
you
serious.
See they apparently put out anti-terrorism vehicles all around Washington, D.C. and New York, too. Did you see it?
Yeah, I told Christy I had never in my life seen as much police force out. I've been to D.C. I went this past November, was a year ago, and I hadn't been back since now. And the police presence there was so thick, and everyone has got cold steel faces, and they look at you. And then when I went in to go and meet with my congressman, you talking about TSA giving you a search? My Lord, I got searched.
Really?
I got patted up and down. I mean, it was nothing barred. Nothing was barred. They felt everything.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, let's not profile, and let's not really target the people that we need to target, but let's look for the innocent people, the children, the old ladies, the you know, the young, they're the dangerous ones. Yeah.
Exactly. But it was an experience. But you guys are doing a great show. I just
Thank
couldn't
you.
Get to a place where I could log on, so I said, well, I can get the number and I can call. So when I want, I said that I promised Christy I would listen this week and I would try to call in. And by gosh dog it, I was darn determined I was going to keep my promise.
Thank you, Trisha.
Well, I appreciate that.
No,
baby. So glad you did.
No. Oh, I am so
I'm glad
you
got out of Washington, D.C. I am so glad you got out of Washington, D.C. Now, Trisha, what's your take on the Saudi national who they investigated for the Boston bombing? What's your take on him? Do you have any feelings at all about him one way or another?
Well, I've got to say this, okay. After talking to some of the people that I talked to today, it's disgusting to think that we send our taxpayer dollars over there. We send them our airplanes, and this man has the unmitigated gall to pull this crap, and everybody in D.C. says, oh, but let's not jump to conclusions. Bull crap.
Yeah.
I'm not jumping to a conclusion. This is what came out of D.C., that he was this. This was who he is. All right? This is who he is. Okay? Don't tell me I'm jumping to conclusions. And don't tell me it's okay to send my money over there. Don't tell me it's okay to send the money. We pay for these planes to go over there so they can come over here and do this to us. This is crazy. It's ludicrous. This is, oh, my God. And I hope that they do find some bit of evidence to prove without a shadow of a doubt that he did it. I do.
Well, it's really odd that Kerry was over there and Saudi, you know, and closed-door conference, and all of a sudden things changed and he wasn't a suspect. That just tells you a whole lot right there.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. And then Kerry, I heard something about Kerry meeting before a Senate committee today, or was it a representative committee today, where he was about Benghazi, and one of the congressmen asked him, are we going to find out why Suzanne Rice went on the morning Sunday shows and lied? And he goes, no, you're not.
What?
Yeah.
He said, no, we're not going to know. He's not going to do anything?
He said, no, he's not going to do anything about it.
Did you hear the very beginning of my show? Did you hear the very beginning of the show?
I did not.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I did not.
It's very good, interesting comments that you just gave, because that's what I started with, was really totally off subject of what we're talking about tonight. But there's an H.R. 36 that's being proposed by Frank Wolf, and supported by 700 special ops and by about 120 congressmen that are co-sponsoring it to ask for a select committee to investigate the Benghazi event. And they're asking very pertinent questions. So he just better get his little behind out of the way so that they do this and get it done, and get it done now instead of yesterday.
Yeah, he was saying to the chairman of this committee, yeah, I'm going to make sure that you get all the information that you need and blah, 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 blah. And then the next one asking, so are we going to be able to know why Susan Rice was, you know, went on all the Sunday morning shows? And that's when he said no. I mean, okay, all he was asking is, we want to know, point blank, straight up, who told her to go out and lie, because there is a link to that lie. We want to know if it was Obama. We want to know if it was Hillary. We want to know who told her to do that crap. That's a cover-up right there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, with what you – I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, baby, you go ahead.
Well, with what you said about Kerry saying no, I mean, just flat out telling us no, we're not going to know, I'm seeing a parallel between the regime's arrogance, you know, his arrogance and Obama's arrogance, and the arrogance of the terrorists who are bombing us. I mean, it seems to me to draw a parallel, and it's screaming at me that they are getting bolder.
Yes, exactly.
They are getting bolder.
Exactly.
Our enemies
are
getting bolder.
You would be surprised how many hints of this whole martial law thing, that everything seems to be coming together. You know, why all of a sudden this week? On Patriots Day, number one, we had the bombing set off, and it, you know, this Saudi guy, right? Now, all of a sudden, we have all these senators and everybody who are getting, and the president, too, he's getting rising letters. I mean, all of a sudden, all of this commotion that's going on, all of this, and you know he signed that executive order some time ago that, you know, in an attempt to protect us from Iran because they made threats, he was going to sign for the martial law and everything. All of this stuff is coming together too quickly. Makes me very uncomfortable. And if you'd been in where I was today and you could have felt what I felt and saw what I was, you would have never, ever doubted in your mind for one moment something evil is going on.
Yep.
Where were you at when you were being searched?
I was going into the Capitol building to go up to the to Crenshaw's office. He has his office in the Capitol building.
Oh, wow.
And,
okay.
Yeah, in the Capitol building. I wanted to go see Marco Rubio, but now I know why. They had the building that he's in, they had it all shut down because of all the rising letters going on and everything. They just told me he was in chambers. He was not available.
I'm just glad you're out of there.
Me too. Me too, hon. Me too. I really am.
Well, I think Kerr is orchestrating a whole lot of what's going on by way of being the resident alien in terms of being the first point of contact for just about anybody, everyone from Iran to Syria to Saudi. Yeah, I think they're all just kind of coming in and figuring that CARE's kind of the first point of contact for them and using them in any way, shape, and form to start and placement and planning. I mean, how many of these guys were just arrested? How many of the guys that I just read through all of that are such fine, upstanding young men that they just, you know, are honest and upfront, and none of them.
Oh, God,
they're all criminals, and they're all
against
the Constitution.
They don't mind telling you how they feel about this country, and that's what gets me. They do not mind at all telling you how they feel about the American people in this country. They don't mind coming and putting a foot on our soil and setting up bombs to blow stuff up and kill people and want to rape and do all these things to our women. They have no problem saying it. Now, let a patriot say something like that. How quickly would we be under the jail?
That's right.
I'm getting sick and tired of political correctness being the way now. No, it's not right that one or a minority can rule the majority. It's not right. And they're ruling. They are ruling. Good God Almighty. You heard about the Senate bill for the gun, the whole gun thing failed in the Senate today.
Yes.
I heard
that. Yeah, I know. And then Obama came out and made his little speech about, you know, this has got to be done and we're going to do this. And you know, with that little mad look on his face and everything. Bull crap. Who cares?
No, he is in violation of his oath of office. He is in violation of the Constitution. And anybody who voted for that is in violation of the Constitution. What part of shall not be infringed do these people not get? Tricia, I'm so glad you're safe, though. I'm so glad you're away from there.
Me too. And it's going to be a long time, baby girl.
Safe trip back to Florida.
Thank you. The dogs and I are going to spend the night in Fayetteville and then get up and leave and continue to go down to Florida. And by the way, Obamacare, the IRS has set up these meetings with all these different HR, human resources people. And what they told us was, okay, you have to submit your questions that you want answered by them. You have to submit them ahead of time. They will randomly choose the ones they wanted to answer.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah, very interesting. Do you know how many questions they actually – we were there from 8 o'clock this morning until noon, and they only answered five questions. None of them were mine.
Wow.
Not one question of mine did they answer.
Were you there with the group?
There was me, and I guess maybe 15 or 20 other HR people from across the country were there.
Okay. Interesting.
And then I sat down and I tried to talk to Crenshaw. And he's another one who needs to be voted out of office and recalled and everything else. And you know what he said to me? We being the Congress, is not even quite sure how the whole Obamacare thing is going to work. And I looked across the table at him and I said, you don't know how it's going to work. You're going to inflict this pain on the American people, and you don't know how it's going to work. And they're asking for more money for something. They don't know how it's going to work. He couldn't answer. He couldn't answer. And that's it. This is inflicting pain. This Obamacare is inflicting pain on a lot of people. The question I ask, because we're going to have some retirees who are going to retire, I wanted to know how all of this is going to affect the retirees. You know, are they going to transfer to COBRA? Are they going to have to go to the exchanges? Blah, blah, blah. And they wouldn't even answer a simple question like that. Not even a simple question like that. And it should have been a pretty simple question. And they just didn't even answer.
Interesting.
This country is
Tricia.
Yes, baby.
Are you gonna be available Friday night on our Z show?
I'm gonna try my best. I am.
Well, if you can, why don't you get back on the panel with us and update us on this Obamacare stuff? That would be great.
I'd be glad to. I would be more than happy to. And I'm going to try. I don't have anything as far as what goes right now pressing. Okay. My brochures are done. I just have to go in and just do some simple things and what have you. And I would be glad to. I'm going to try my best. Heaven forbid anything should go wrong between now and then. But, yeah, I want very much to be there. And even if I'm not on the panel, I can at least call in.
Please do.
And let everybody
know. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and I'm going to get off the phone now because I got some doggies I have to go feed.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Tricia. Have a safe trip back.
Thank you, honey. And Christy, I love you, baby. I love everybody in the chat room. I don't know who's there, but I love them all. And Liza, thank you so much. You're doing a wonderful job.
Thank you.
I love you too, Tricia.
And I will talk to you soon, guys.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. That's an interesting story in Washington, D.C., eh?
Oh, yeah. It must be very, very tense there. Can you imagine?
Yep. Wow.
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
Okay,
CARE.
CARE. I have some stuff on CARE.
Go ahead.
Of course, I looked up CARE in California, where I live. And Tuesday, April 30th is Muslim Day at the Capitol in Sacramento. But CARE in San Diego, in my town, they have a thing called the Search for 50 Champions. And this is verbatim from their website, challenging Islamophobia, empowering our youth, and protecting our civil liberties. And then they have this range of questions that you can click onto as potential things that you could, you know, be complaining about. One of the choices is, I was bullied at school. Or, my city rejected a proposal to build a mosque. What do I do? Or, I was asked to remove my hijab at work. Or, I was visited by the FBI. Or, I watched a public official slander Islam again on TV. How can I challenge this hate speech? And then another part of their website, this is CARE San Diego, defend your community by giving your zakat to CARE San Diego. All right, CARE Chicago, on April Fool's Day this year, they won a judgment for Muslim Center's Freedom of Religion, Irshad Learning Center, an Islamic religious institution primarily serving the Iranian community. This was 2 years in the making. They're making a big deal of this at CARE Chicago. A district court judge by the name of Rebecca Pallmeyer granted summary judgment for a zoning permit that had been denied by the DuPage County Board in 2010. CARE filed a lawsuit immediately against the county and its board members. Okay, CARE Houston, they are worried about Senate Bill SB 1639, which, of course, is the anti-foreign law bills. So CARE in Houston, they seem to be very worried about that. And quite a few things on their website is they're in support of Gaza. They're urging Congress to halt humanitarian disaster in Gaza. Excuse me. What in the world is Congress going to be able to do about Hamas? Because that's your humanitarian disaster in Gaza. It's not anything to do with Congress or America or Israel. That has to do with Hamas. So if there's a humanitarian disaster in Gaza, it's because of Hamas and because of the people who voted Hamas in. All right. On CARE Houston's website, reaching out to Muslim immigrants, they have a coalition of Muslim travel agents. They have a thing where to report citizenship delays now, report airport incidents now, and CARE Houston, they want Muslims to thank ESPN for Islam is a religion of peace. Apparently, ESPN did a thing on Islam is a religion of peace. Another thing that CARE is doing. CARE demands that Senate deny Israel the right to protect itself. And I'm going to post a link in the chat room right now, because this is surprising to me. I guess my senator in California, my Democratic senator, Barbara Boxer, apparently...
What a lovely lady.
Oh, yeah. Well, but this... apparently, she sponsored this bill, or she wrote this bill. A bill introduced by Barbara Boxer would codify Israel's right to discriminate against Americans. This article right here, not the one I just put in the chat room, but this other one that I'm reading, is that Barbara Boxer wanted this bill, and so I'll read from the article that I just put in the chat room. CARE demands that Senate deny Israel the right to protect itself. Yesterday, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation, encouraged citizens to contact their senators, asking them to block a visa waiver provision in the United States-Israel Strategic Partnership Act of 2013. The provision adds Israel to a list of 37 trusted friends and allies of the United States whose citizens may travel to the United States for tourism or business for up to 90 days without having to obtain a visa. To be approved for the program by the Department of Homeland Security and State Department, Israel must make, quote, every reasonable effort without jeopardizing the security of the State of Israel to ensure that reciprocal travel privileges are extended to all United States citizens. Okay, so what this basically is that, you know, Israel and the United States are allies. We're not necessarily worried about Israelis. That doesn't count some people in Israel. And they're not necessarily worried about us. But CARE is demanding that this not pass. CARE doesn't like. They're trying to portray it as something that is going to discriminate against Arab Americans, and they are very, very, very hot about this. So they are urging their members to ask Senate to drop the Israel visa waiver exemption, because they don't think that we should allow Israelis in without visas when we're not allowing Arabs and Muslims in without visas. Sorry, Israel is our friend, and we're not worried about Israel per se. All right.
unbelievable. Well, let me give you a couple of updates from their board of directors. CARE is engaging in medical trainees and seeking their opinions. The CARE 2013 National Resident Survey, in collaboration with Nanos Research, will be launched in March, this past March. Invitations to participate in this year's survey emailed out. The survey is going to ask about work hours, handover training, employment prospects, and career counseling mentorship. Data collected from the questions will be used by CARE to advocate in areas that are significant concern to the members. CARE is hosting an outreach dinners for local resident leaders across the country to provide updates on CARE's work and to hear what is important in your region. CARE is also hosting lunches for graduating medical students to introduce them to CARE, its hard work, and to encourage the future members to become involved as they begin their residency. CARE is representing Canadian residents. Cal, hey, in your neck of the woods. CARE's mentorship program or position paper, as well as CARE's resident principles on transfers, will be presented at the 2013 Canadian Conference on Medical Education. In addition, CARE is preparing position papers on handovers. I don't know what that is. Addressing inappropriate behavior. Oh, I know what that is. And health human resources. These position papers are being developed by residents in consultation with residents and will be shared with the national stakeholders and partners in medical education. So these folks, see, CARE's collaborating with other national stakeholders. CARE's released conjoint press releases with the CMA and the CFMS on addressing health human resources. They are working very diligently with very educated people, and I'm telling you, you know, if we don't get in and start working with our colleges, working with our just anything from community colleges to graduates, that to get them to understand what CARE is all about, to get CARE out of there, I think that's where we're losing the boat on a lot of this kind of stuff. In addition, all of the Muslim Capital Day, folks, if you don't know that Muslim Capital Day goes on in just about every state around the nation, you need to look and watch for it. Washington had one on January 21st. Some 400 Washington state Muslims were scheduled to meet with dozens of their elected representatives. They're meeting with the representatives in terms of being the politically correct and sweet and honest and upfront people. Texas had one January 31st. They bussed them in from Houston and Dallas. And, of course, that was where they had we don't have to follow the constitutional law, guys speaking out right there on the Capitol. Isn't that great? Tennessee had one March 12th. Minneapolis, March 20th. Rally was held at the Rotunda. All participants gathered to hear elected leadership and Muslim leaders speak to the Muslim community. The Minnesota Secretary of State Mark Ritchie and Minnesota Attorney General Lori Swanson confirmed their attendance. Missouri was April 10th. Florida was just this past April 16th, right scheduled on Israel's Independence Day. Ahmed Badir moved it. Used to be around early March. And like you referenced, Lucha, California is April 30th. Michigan is May 17th. Then they're having a National Muslim Policy Conference Capital Day where they're currently finalizing the details for the first National Muslim American Policy Conference and Capital Day in Washington, D.C. Wow. Well, we are getting close to the end of the show, and I wanted to go through a lot of the CARE activities that are going on. There's everything from Ohio waging, CARE's waging legal jihad so Muslims can skip work for Friday prayers. They're fighting the Oklahoma anti-Muslim bill. And all of this I pulled directly from CARE National. I'm telling you, guys, what a way to learn what they're up to and what they're doing. But I've got an announcement to make for next week and a recording I wanted to play for everybody. Lucha, do you have any more you want to lead out with in terms of CARE? I've got about a 10-minute audio that I want to play for everybody, for our guest speaker that's coming in next week. Lucha?
Oh, I didn't. Sorry about that. I muted myself.
That's all right. Do you want to anything else out about CARE? Or?
Nothing more on CARE except that they can stuff it in their Quran. And I know that we have this wonderful, and their Sirah and their Hadith, by the way. Muhammad can stuff it there, too. But anyway,
yeah.
We do
we have an
audio, which is going to be our guest next week. We hope you guys can join us because we have an awesome guest for next week. Eliza, I'll let you take it from there. And RZ, thanks for joining us. And The Ultimate MJR, Bobby Fletcher, are some new people that joined us. So thank you for joining us. And Eliza, take it away.
All right, I'm going to play this. We've got Emil Imani that's going to join us next week. We're going to get a chance to talk to him about his courageous efforts to leave Islam. But there was a YouTube out there that I caught of him that was so incredible. I just had to play it for you as a prelogue to next week. So let me play this before we get to the end of the show, and hopefully we can get through this.
My breach with Islam started as far back as I could discern things. More to the point, I never embraced Islam in the first place, although I was born and raised in a Muslim family. For one thing, I had a very difficult time following a so-called religion whose founder and followers had butchered my ancestors, raped and sold our women, burned our libraries, and destroyed our magnificent culture. Islam was forced down the throats of Iranians with the sword of Allah. In my heart, I never considered myself a Muslim. However, I didn't reveal this until later in life for fear of retribution by radical Muslims. Sharia law stipulates that any Muslim who turns his back on Islam should be given a chance to revert to the faith. For an unrepentant male apostate, death is the prescribed punishment and life imprisonment for the female apostate. Kill whoever changes his religion, said Sahih al-Bukhari. Islam considers an apostate as a person who unilaterally breaks the covenant he has made with the faith. An apostate is condemned as guilty of turning his back on Allah's immutable eternal religion. I came to the realization that the root cause of my people's degradation and suffering was Islam. It was a creed imposed on an enlightened, tolerant, and free people at the point of the sword by savages hailing from the Arabian Peninsula during the 7th century, with promises of booty and women in this world and glorious eternal sensual rewards in the promised paradise of Allah in the next. With each passing day, I rejoice more and more in my good fortune and my ability to avoid the yoke of Islamic slavery and its blinders that imprisons 1.5 billion people by walls of superstition, hatred of others, and celebration of death. Things Islamic not only did not resonate with me, they often clashed head-on with what I valued and loved. What appealed to me and even enchanted me were more often than not taboo in Islam or anathema to the creed. I loved light, beauty in all its forms, poetry, ancient Iranian culture and traditions. I loved laughter, celebrations of joy such as birthdays, our yearly festivities of Nowruz, my favorite lasts for 13 days. Nowruz, this ancient festival has been celebrated for thousands of years by my people. It ushers in the spring, welcomes renewal of life, and expresses optimism for the year ahead to bless us with good health, abundant food, family and friends in the land of a civilized and free people. I have always believed one cannot possibly be a Persian and hold to the lofty tenets of the ancient Iranian Zoroastrian triad of good thoughts, good words, good deeds, and still remain a Muslim. In the same fashion, one cannot cherish American values, the Bill of Rights, and the United States Constitution and be a true Muslim. They are comprehensively incompatible with Sharia law. Iranian Muslims are victims of the Islamic virus that has destroyed in them their traditional respect for diversity. It is the Iranian ancient fundamental belief in the validity and value of diversity that is enshrined in the Cyrus the Great Cylinder, the unconditional respect for the complete rights of all the people of the world that has held the nation together over the millennia. Although Islam was imposed on Iran some 1400 years ago, Iranians deeply value their own ancient non-Arab identity and have never fully surrendered to the Arab culture. Currently, a large number of Iranians are completely fed up with Islam and they want to leave this dogma of hate and violence. In fact, many have already done so, but they simply aren't able to come forward and announce it for obvious reasons. Such duplicity exists within the Iranian culture. Originally, Iranians were forced to accept Islam to save their lives from Arab invaders. But deep within the heart of every single Iranian alive today exists a burning resentment to the Arab Islamic invasion of their homeland and culture. It is ironic that many Iranians may actually confess to being Muslims, yet an overwhelming number of Iranians have never read the Quran or understand its language. The events in history have toughened present-day Iranians. They have become great pretenders. But the totality of 1400 years of Islamic barbarity and savagery must end. We no longer need to pretend that we are practicing Muslims, when in fact we are not. Realistically speaking, there is perhaps 10 to 15% of the population that continues to support the clerical system in varying degrees. Many in this group are government employees, mullahs, and hired thugs such as the Basij. Also, the regime has some backers among the poor, the less educated, and the deeply religious. Yet the alienation from the regime and Islam spans the entire spectrum of the Iranian society, with the intelligentsia and the university students leading the determined opposition to end Islamic rule. Masses of Iranians are irreparably alienated from a corrupt and oppressive Islamic rule. The rule of the Islamic Republic of Iran is crumbling. The previously solid edifice is finally showing many cracks that continue to grow. There are just too many fault lines to list here. My fellow secularist Iranians and I have indeed done and continue to do what we can to help our compatriots in Iran who are on the front line fighting Islam and the Islamic regime. The 2009 protests were just as much against the Islamic Republic as they were about Shia Islam. In fact, much of it was against Islam itself. People have experienced what a primitive and defective system of belief Islam is and aim to abandon it for good. Many will still hang on to it to some extent for some time. Yet, a great many will simply leave Islam and even actively oppose it. There are still those who foolishly claim that Muhammad was a messenger from God and the Quran is a divinely revealed book. My suggestion is that they use their intellect and read the Quran fully for themselves without the assumption that the book is the literal word of God and that Muhammad was their messenger. Without this assumption as their starting point, they will find better than 90% of the book is about violence, threats of hell, exclusion of people and the like. What kind of God could dictate things like that, what you find in the Quran? It took Muhammad 20 years to reveal this hodgepodge book that reads more like expressions of a delusional individual with multiple personality disorder. I bemoan the plight of my native land and the people who have suffered and continue to suffer under Islam. Without Islam, there wouldn't be any Muslims to hoist the banner of hate and violence against non-Muslims. A few claim that Islam has done some good in the past. Well, that's debatable. There are those who are equally convinced that Islam has inflicted a great deal of suffering on others from its inception to the present. What we all must agree on is that Islam and its Sharia laws, at the very least, do not fit in today's world. Islam is a creed of an ignorant people in a primitive and barbaric age. It is fixed in time and place. It harbors the ambition of taking the 21st century world back 14 centuries and ruling it by its dogma of violence, intolerance, injustice, and death. Yet, Islam is not only an obsolete vestige of a defunct era, but itself is an infinitely fractured belief that can hardly put its own home in order. The numerous Islamic sects are at each other's throats. Subsects and schools despise each other as much as they hate non-Muslims. Hatred, not love, drives Islam. I'm not against Muslims. I'm not against Muslims. I condemn Islam with all its derivatives and those who support and promote it.
Regrettably, Islam cannot be reformed. Keep in mind that Islam claims it is the perfect eternal faith for mankind. Splits have occurred and will continue to occur in Islam. Yet, reformation has not happened in nearly 1400 years and is not going to happen. Islam is carved in granite, just the way it is, no change. Allah's book is sealed. In the monumental task of dealing with Islam and its variations, every individual, group and government must combine their resources and energies to prevail. We must urge all people to resist Islam's encroachment and not be deceived by a sanitized version presented in non-Islamic lands. The destiny of civilized life hangs in the balance. Shrinking of this responsibility would be an unpardonable act of every enlightened human being and organization that values human liberty and dignity.
We made it through. We have about a minute left, and I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. Thank you all for being in the chat room and those that are listening online. You guys are great. Iggy Mom, Bobby Fletcher, Kath Firm, Freedom Wings, guest, Cal, a.k.a. Red Fox, and, of course, my great co-host, Lucha, Poppy, Reactionaries, Rob L., and Vito, Mama Mia, No Sharia. Thank you all, and I am blessed to be a part of this Radio Jihad Network. Lucha, I'll let you take it away.
Thank you all for being here real quick. Cal, a.k.a. Red Fox, Tuesday, Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern, Hold Your The Awakening, Saturday, 11 p.m. Eastern, EDL Show, Thursday, Friday, Sunday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern, Vito, Mama Mia No Sharia, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, and Reactionaries, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. I don't know about Central Time. RZ. Thank you all for being here, and we love you all. God bless you all, and I'm looking forward to our guest.
God bless America, and you guys are fantastic. Stay strong. Stay true. We will win this battle.
Amen.
And I'm trying to find the ending show. I think we're out of time.
Oh, RZ is reminding me that 7 p.m. is what? Is that Eastern time, RZ, or Pacific time? Or I don't know. RZ thinks Central time is the only time that counts. So he's putting 7 p.m. in there for a reason. Well, I go by Pacific time, homie.
Oh, too funny. All right, I think we're out of time, but I'm going to play a little bit of the closing, and we are not going to take it.
Nope.